Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Straight Talk with Stan Macklin. We're so glad to have you on the program today, and I just want to say I really appreciate those of you that are listening. It's so good to be back on the air, and it's good to be able to deal with current events that we address from our platform here on Straight Talk. And we got an exciting program today. We got a special guest coming all the way from Peoria, Illinois, Ryan Johnson. And he works in mental health, and we'll be bringing him on pretty soon, Ryan Johnson. But mental health is a issue that we all need to be aware of, because it affects us in our daily lives, workplace. It's all around us, and as we know, we need to talk about it. So we're going to be having an open discussion about it today, and. Mr. Johnson, are you on the program today?
Yes, I am.
Ryan Johnson.
How are you today?
Good.
Hi there. How are you?
Glad to have you on the program today.
Pleasure to be
here.
Pleasure to be here.
Yes, we're glad to have you. For those of you that want to give some comments when Mr. Johnson and I talk about mental illness, now he works in that field, and he's done a lot of. He's had some close encounters working with people who were at the brink of suicide and many other things, and we're going to be talking about that. But Mr. Johnson, I want to get your comment today. As you know, in Cleveland, Ohio, you know about the situation there that happened with the individual who got mad at his girlfriend, and he just started taking out on other people primarily. He went out and he found a 74-year-old man who was going by the roadside picking up cans, and he walked up to him and asked him to say his girlfriend's name. And when he said his name, he shot the elderly man. It was a deadly shooting. And anybody in their normal mind, if I can say it like that, would not do anything like that, but there was a nationwide manhunt for him, and it's sad to say that he too took the cowardly way out by killing himself after he did that deed. But Ryan, I know that you encounter stuff like that. What do you think about a situation like that? What Steve Stevens did to that elderly man?
Well, I've followed the story slightly, or my bits and pieces off the news feeds. So based off just a small amount that I've, you know, listened to and watched over the program, I think that he was also in the mental health field. However, it that type of misplaced hostility can be result of anger, because I do believe that he was upset at the girlfriend, and also the guy was associated with the girlfriend. However, there still has to be some underlying you know, deeply mental health issues that have gone unaddressed, you know, for a number of years, which commonly happen. And unfortunately, particularly among the African-American community, we fail to get the mental health treatment that we need. We unfortunately believe or are under the impression that these issues are not our issues when they are very so. We are just as equally, you know, susceptible to mental health issues as any other race. However, we treat it as if we're not, and it goes untreated. And unfortunately, people decompensate, and, you know, as time goes on, they get worse. And that illness, you know, it gets a little more, you know, exacerbated over a period of time to where you end up with these situations similar to this or and also other situations and circumstances similar to this.
Now, tell me about the type of work you do. I know that you've been in some situations where you've gotten a very important phone call from the police to intervene in situations, and which to me seems kind of risky itself, especially have to go in there and talk a person and doing what he or she wants to do to harm themselves. Tell us about some of those encounters that you've experienced. Intervention is what it is.
Yes, and I've been in the field. I've been doing this for 20 years now. The bulk of our calls are people who are suicidal and homicidal, and we do get those calls from the police department because a lot of times the police are – we work very closely with the police department. They do have their own negotiators. However, the police are, you know, they're trying to contain and to control, you know, and being understanding to some of these sensitive issues that take place with people who have mental health issues, you know, really should be done by a qualified mental health provider that's in your area, because there's certain rules. And, I'm sorry?
Would you say a lot of those people that you go see are the victims of such a mental state?
It can be, you know. We look at there's a number of causes as to how people get, you know, mental illnesses take place. You know, it can be, you know, drug induced.
But
it
come
can
on
be something,
now, we, come on. You know,
it can be something medical.
It can be
hereditary.
It can also be something right
traumatic.
Because we've come through slavery, we've come through Jim Crow, we come through all kinds of things. I mean, we're survivalists, we're natural survivalists. And how in the world can, because Molly makes me mad, I'm going to take it out on somebody else. I'm finding it kind of hard to digest that.
Well, of course, we're survivalists because we've gone through a number of oppressive things. However, as intricate as the human mind is, you can only bend it so far until it breaks.
Okay.
And like I said, these common areas that we don't pay attention to.
But I guess I'm trying to play the devil advocate because, come on now, I mean, times have changed, and the pressures that our forefathers, even as go as far as some of our mothers and fathers grew up under, and the things that they endured, they were not victims of mental illness. They were able to being called boy, being called the N-word, being discriminated against, just right out way. But here today, we're so sensitive, we can't take nothing.
I don't know what went on with this man to the extent
that he go gets a gun and he go finds the first person and he picks an elderly man, a man that's 74 years old, done paid his dues in life, raised his kids and so forth, still a 2-year-old son, and he shoots him in his head because he names the woman who he's mad at. I mean, that makes me angry. It makes me feel like I got some mental illness right now.
Well, he was definitely distraught. There was a breakup in the relationship, and also the man had a relationship with his girlfriend, which is, you know, the hook here. You know, the guy was very much involved in the young lady's life, and so that misplaced hostility. And sometimes when people are, you know, distraught like that, he goes after the one thing that he thinks causes the break. He construed this guy as being part of the problem or the root of the problem. It would be without actually analyzing this guy, without having him before me to spend some time to talk to him, without being able to rule out some of the other causes of this, what other mental illnesses that he may have already had some pre-existing conditions. You know, however, you know, let me speak back, let me go back a point when you talked about slavery, Jim Crow laws, all these. Well, you talk in terms of when it comes to African-American people, the rules of engagement has changed. The applications of how we deal with things have also changed. And also the stamina of the minds of African-Americans have changed, because we are no longer of that era where we have to endure this. Can we endure it? We had no choice. So we were able to rise above that oppression. You know, we were able to go through it. However, it does not omit the fact that there was a lot of deep-rooted psychological dysfunction that took place as a result of having to go through things. We were just better at, you know, able to, you know, minimize it, sweep it under the rug. We were able to, you know, dispel it. We were able to keep it within ourselves. And of course, you know, hiding those things, holding those things in, you know. Hey, like I say, as intricate as the human mind is, you can only bend it so far until it breaks. I can assure you that if we were to go back in time and sit down and psychoanalyze a lot of the people, the African Americans that went through, we would find a vast majority of them had mental health issues, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, which was as a result of some of the trauma that they experienced over the years of being called these names, over the years of having to go through these situations. But they were able to maintain. We're living in a society now that does not have, you know, the coping skills that we had when we were enslaved, the coping skills that are a part of the civil rights movement, you know. And am I an analyst enough to say where and how do we get that back? I'm unable to. I'm not trained in that field. However, you know, we've come, you know, a long way from where we was. However, we're, with respect to, you know, psychological enduring, we're a mighty long way from where we were, you know. So those things play a major role. You know, it does play a major role in the society that we have to deal with and the mindset of people that we're dealing with nowadays. There's a, you know, huge, I sit on some boards here in town. One of them is a community against violence steering committee. And, you know, when we look at, you know, what the African-American does to themselves with respect to violence and how, you know, little regard for life is nowadays, you know, and we look back to how we were once a group of individuals who cared for each other, you know, there's a lot that's changing now.
Flexibility.
There's a lot that's changing. And I think that I do believe, you know, and it's just not my professional opinion, but it's just an opinion of me being a man of color and also being a man who's watched, you know, who come from the era of the 70s until now to the present. You know, we have some psychological dysfunctions that we really need to deal with, that needs to be addressed across the board with, you know, particularly our young men. You know, we have a large, even now we still have our, you know, African-American children are, you know, placed in child protective custody at a more alarming rate than they are non-African-Americans. And even then we're going right back to that old pull the families away, destroy the families, you know, take these children, place them in other households, no different than they did in slavery. And that separation anxiety that we have now as a result of it, man, it's creating, I mean, it's the perfect recipe for what we have with this situation or circumstance like this, not to say that he was taken away, but from these things and situations like this, this trauma that they go through, you know, the end results are, you know, nowadays is that we are able to fight back and push back, you know, and a lot of times it's done in the wrong way.
Well, you brought up a lot of good key points, and I'm trying to get a handle on. Now, we can attribute this nothing but to mental illness in terms of what Stephen did, but he had the courage to do what he did, but then after he did it, he couldn't face up to what he done. He couldn't face up. When the law enforcement officers came after him, after he was spotted coming out of a McDonald's, he tried to flee, and they were on him. But he, as they all do, he shot himself in the head. He did. And I think that if you're bold enough to do some asinine stuff like that, and of course we attribute it to mental illness, why can't you also complete it all the way to the end, to where you can at least sit down and talk to some of the officials as to why you did that? All we got is just bits and pieces of it. So it makes me wonder. Because I go inside of the county jail, and I teach a reentry class, and it's a fact. The majority of the men and women that are there, they're there due to mental illness and addiction, substance abuse. And how is it that people, as you brought out, coping skills? Maybe we need to work on our coping skills. We just can't cope anymore. We want the easy way out. And hurting people hurt people. And I think that somehow we got to take responsibility and realize that hurting people hurt people, and we can't just rationalize that, well, it's just a mental illness. It is a mental illness, but how do we get a cure for it? Is medicine the answer? I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
There's no wonder pill out there that is going to cure all. You know, there's a combination of things that have to take place, even if medication is involved. There also has to be some kind of therapeutic session that one would have to go to, along with seeing a psychiatrist. You know, and I also believe that clinicians are key parts of this, because someone has to be able to sit down with you and say, hey, what's going on with you today? And for you to build a rapport with that person and kind of share these ideas so they can help you work through these things. I'm going to go back to this again with this gentleman here. Like I say, without being able to analyze him, without being able to interview him, without being able to do a complete psych eval with a number of different accesses that would require being able to rule out some of the things. You know, a lot of things are not only just, you know, mental health issues. Some things are situational. You know, whereas, you know, a person has, like I say, when we go back to mental health issues, you look at, you know, four common causes to this. Is it drug induced? Is it medical? Is it hereditary? Is it something traumatic that took place? Those are the four common areas that we look at when we interview with someone. Now, however, and a large majority, you know, of people who have mental health issues or deep-rooted psychological dysfunctions and commit crimes, you know, heinous acts, you know, one of the things that mental health does not allow them to say, oh, I done this wrong. You know, if you're to the point to where you're so altered mentally where you're completing these acts, trust me, it doesn't, you know, you don't get the remorseful feeling that, you know, one gets when he's encountered with the police, you know. And I'm just speculating here because, you know, I don't know what was going on with him at that time. I don't know if he does have a mental health issue. I don't know for sure, but I know that there's been times when most people who commit heinous acts and they have a deep-rooted psychological dysfunction, they are not even aware of their actions, and they clearly aren't aware that their actions are wrong. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, his act. Yes, sir. You know, there's a lot to be said. It would require, you know, a fitness hearing for this guy to see where he was at psychologically, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, some of the, and it is unfair for
wait,
you know, when we don't get an opportunity
right
to get the root cause for this. Sure.
Hold on. You're so good with it, but hold on. You said, did I hear you say they're not even aware of what they're doing?
Yes, in many cases, okay. When you have someone
because
deep
this rooted. this dude now, he did it Facebook Live. He gave almost a play-by-play action of what his hideous crime, what he did. And
well, you know, the missing part that I saw.
And for 2 hours they played that on Facebook Live. I mean, come on.
And it'd be interesting to see it. I'd like to see it for those 2 hour duration, because in that 2 hours you're able to see whether or not he's responding to an internal stimulus, whether or not this man is, you know, having, you know, conversations or multiple conversations with, you know, if he's hearing voices, if he's hearing command voices, if he's hearing broadcast voices, if he's being told by voices to complete these acts. You know, you're able to see if there's actual psychosis present while this gentleman is going throughout this two-hour period. I have not been able to see that, but it would be interesting to see what was going on with him during that two-hour period.
Okay, two things. Now, Prince Terry just recently disclosed that at the age of 12, when his mother was killed, Princess Diana, that he literally just shut down. He didn't deal with it till 20 years later. He just recently come out and acknowledged that he was a victim of a mental illness because how he was traumatized by that accident that his mother went through, or I don't know if it was accident or whatever, but anyway, he's talking about it now, and I think that is what helps people. On the other side, you have an individual like Dylann Roof, the young man, 21-year-old man, went into the church in Charleston, South Carolina, who knew what he was doing, who planned his situation. Went in there, sat out at a Bible study, said these are good people, and then he killed them all done, killed them dead, and here's what he told the judge. There's nothing wrong with me. I know what I did. I'm not crazy.
Yes, of course, and he also wanted to represent. But that is a good question that you would have bring up, and I think that at one point in time he wanted to represent himself. And I think we all know the cliche behind that he who represents himself has a fool for a client. I mean, when you think in terms of, you know, there has to be some, it's not of the norm to want to go out and just randomly shoot people who have done nothing to you. You know, this situation with this young African-American male is that it's more personalized because of the involvement of his girlfriend, and also the guy that he killed was very good friends, who was some sort of a provider for his girlfriend. And so there, I'd love to see that 2 hours, you know, that he spent and just get the feel of this. And of course, you know, when you talk in terms of the heir to, you know, Princess Diana, you know, you're talking about a kid who can, you know, and it often happens in America where trauma takes place in a home. However, there's always going to be some post-trauma, you know, after going through a situation like that. I don't care who you are, you know, and I'm a firm believer that it requires God to get you through these things, you know. However, they are able, he can, you know, being that he is of the public eye and he's an heir of the country over there. So his behaviors and his mannerisms are constantly under a microscope. So, you know, I would assume that played a major, major role. However, place him out of the royalty status and put him over here in America and something like that takes place. Then we're talking about a kid with PTSD who's going to have a lifelong suffering of this disease, and is going to need treatment, he's going to need groups, he's going to need counseling, he's going to need a therapist, going to need a psychiatrist, and going to also need medication to also make it through these things. And not all of them require that, but a vast majority of them do, because it's something traumatic that takes place in your life, You know, can you imagine the loss of your mother in such a traumatic way? And not to mention that, being that they are of the public eye and they were public figures, it was constantly broadcast. So he had no escaping of it, you know, other than what they would shield him from over there. But I would imagine that he would have, you know, he's got one thing. He's got a support system that is beyond the comparison of most of the people here, you know, any John Q. person in America.
Right.
Yeah, and you can only mask it so long, and you know normally in most mental health issues, you know, particularly like in psychosis manifests itself in late teens, early 20s, where you know you can no longer hide it, you can no longer mask it, you can no longer you know minimize it because you start getting bizarre, you start making bizarre statements, you start making doing bizarre acts, so. You know, some people are better at hiding things than others. You know, when we talk, we go back to those days of Jim Crow. We go back to those days of slavery.
Sure.
We go back to those days when we, you know, during the Civil Rights Movement, when we were oppressed, when we were beat, when we were sick, dog sick.
Mm-hmm.
On us. We were able to just mask these things. It didn't go away. We weren't able to eliminate it from our minds. It's not like we were bricks or rocks and didn't have feelings. Of course, we had feelings, but we were able to, as a group of people, a vast majority of them took that anger, held it inside of them, and probably utilized it in a different form, you know, of their outlets for anger in different areas. But that's how we do also have a great deal of internal abuses that have taken place throughout the African-American community. There's a lot of things that, you know, that we still had misplaced hostility that took place then. I mean, everybody wasn't able to mask it or to get away with saying, I'm okay no matter what took place, you know. I'm just going to take my stripes and walk away. You know, we're not subhuman like that. Well, I think that no matter what and who you are, I think that communication and getting these issues out on the table is necessary and key. You know, the problem with it, when it took place back then, it was such a widespread of, you know, abuse that took place. Everybody knew somebody who had just gotten beaten, who had just gotten disrespected, who had just gotten called the N-word, who had just gotten spit upon. Everyone knew someone, so we were all able to identify with it and talked about it, and that helped us make it through. Some of these people that go through things now, it's individualized, and they aren't willing to share it until it comes out the wrong way, you know. So I think
so
it's a good thing to be able to talk to people, you know, and get these issues out on the table. You can't leave them untouched.
Maybe that's why people write their memoirs. You don't think former President Obama was a victim of mental illness after all the vicious attacks that he had and write out supremacist acts of violence toward him? I know when he went in office, he had solid jet black hair. He came out, his hair is grayer than mine.
It's interesting you would say that. My wife said the same thing. Who is she? No, she's not. She's as far from the mental health field as you can get, but she did make mention that I do believe that there's a lot of pressure with becoming the president of the, you know, the man who is the leader of the free world, you know, and I don't doubt that there is some pressures there, and, you know, who knows what, you know, psychological stresses that take place with that. Being the president, you know, and he took it and he went through during his presidency. He may very well have had to. I'm certain that, you know, exiting during, you know, before, during, and exiting, you know, the presidency, there is definitely psychological involvement.
Well, Mr. Johnson, we got about 60 minutes, 60 seconds left in the program. What would you say in closing to that listener who's listening to the program today? And, I mean, how would you encourage them to deal with mental challenges that they face? What would you say to them? We got about 50 seconds.
Well, I would first, you know, encourage them to seek professional treatment and professional help, because sometimes, unfortunately, talking to your friends, talking to your family, talking to your homies, talking to your guy, talking to your girl, talking to your girlfriend may not be enough. It just may not be enough to help you through some of those situations and circumstances. I would strongly encourage that you would seek, you know, your local outpatient mental health facility who offer an array of things, not just medication, but also a psychiatrist and also a clinician and also possibly a therapist, you know, where you can get, you know, services in the door, you know, you can get a proper assessment, you know, you can get, you know, go back and maybe possibly see the doctor, see the psychiatrist, see the clinician, and then they also offer wraparound services such as a case management services as well. You know, I would strongly encourage that anyone who feels as if they're, you know, under pressure, you know, going through the depressive state for a period of 2 weeks or more to see someone, if nothing else but to rule out, even if it may be situational, go see someone to make sure that you're being seen. And you have to go see the right person. A lot of people go to their, you know, primary care providers and they say, hey, I'm feeling this. Well, it's like going to see an eye doctor when you have a broken arm. You want to see the right doctor to treat the right thing, and that's why it's imperative that you see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, someone who can identify these situations and identify, you know, some of these.
And that's a good note, you know, to end our program. That's a good note to end our program. See somebody. Don't just stay out there in the wilderness, in the woods, feeling you have no help. And please don't take it out on somebody. Mr. Johnson, we got to have you back on the program again sometime. You're very eloquent. You're very articulate in terms of talking about this issue. And I'm glad that I was able to connect with you to be on the program today. And you have a good day. And keep on keeping on doing the work, helping people in a crisis situation.
Well, do, Mr. Backlund. It was my pleasure. Thank you, and I'd love to come back.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.